Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, good evening, everybody. This is Aline Reed, and I want to welcome you to the Tuesday edition of Dr. Harris's Black Lives Matter show, the Women's Edition. And like every other show that we do, for the rest of this year, we're dedicating this to the memory of our sister, our beloved sister, Maria Ells. And this show is particularly hard for me because while Maria Ells was a local giant, Sister Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a giant among not just women, but people all over the country and all over the world. So what I want to do tonight is talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, just a little bit about her background coming up, her education, and then I'd like to talk about the cases that directly, I would think, have a big impact on Black people's lives, and that therein lies the intersectionality that I'm talking about. So what I'd like to do right now is to give everybody the call-in number so that if you want to cuss me out or agree or anything like that about what I'm saying about Ruth, please do so. It's 516 area code 387-1474. So once again, that's 516-387-1474. Of course, you got to do one before that. Okay, so we know that Ruth went to law school. She graduated from Columbia Law in 1959. She was the first in her class. She had difficulties finding a job because she was a woman. And she wound up taking a job at Rutgers Law School in 1963. She left to teach at Columbia, her alma mater, in 1972. Before doing all that, or in addition to doing all that, RBG directed the Women's Rights Project of the ACLU. And Jimmy Carter put her on the United States Court of Appeals in 1980. She served there until 93 when Bill Clinton appointed her to the Supreme Court of the U.S. Now, see, y'all, this is where it starts to get good. Okay. So RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of her most famous cases, wrote the majority opinion for U.S. versus Virginia. This was the Virginia Military Institute, where she stated that qualified women could not be denied admission to the institute. This was a 7-1 decision. Now, the reason that this is important for Black people is obvious. You know, she's talking about women, but we can substitute Black women. We could substitute Black men. Nowadays, we could probably, you know, substitute transgender women. And if they have the qualifications, that would be a category that would fit Ruth Bader Ginsburg's decision. In she dissented in the Ledbetter versus Goodyear Tire case. And I believe that was in 97 and 98. She dissented, and this was a problem where the plaintiff, Lily Ledbetter, found out that she was being paid significantly less than the male counterparts at Goodyear, the exact same qualifications that she had. So Ledbetter sued under Title VII. But she was denied. she was denied based on statute of limitations, and RBG dissented, and she implored Congress to right this wrong. You know, and as it so happens that she continued to press this, and in 2009, President Obama did sign the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act of 2009. Now, one of the things that's near and dear to my heart, because I have worked previously with developmentally disabled adults, is the 1999 decision regarding disability rights. This was Olmstead versus LC. And just to give you a little overview, I'm using initials here, LC and EW were women with mental illness who were institutionalized even after medical professionals said that they could be treated and to continue their treatment in a community-based program. They didn't have to be institutionalized. And RBG delivered the majority opinion in 1990 that upheld the 1990 Americans with Disability Act. And she maintained that the states were required to place people with mental disabilities in community settings rather than to have them institutionalized. We know that in 2000, one of the famous cases of Bush versus Gore with those dangling chads in Florida, RBG wound up dissenting on that, and it was found that there was no way that they could hold a constitutional recount in Florida. And so she lost that one, but her dissent is famous. And this next case I find is particularly interesting. It is a 2000 case preventing environmental pollution. This is Friends of the Earth versus Laidlaw Environmental Services. Friends of the Earth filed suit after Laidlaw Environmental continued, they failed to abide by the limit on mercury discharges into the river. And they had over 400 occasions in less than 10 years where this happened. Now, RBG delivered the 7-2 decision, and she stated that illegal discharges of pollutants into a river would cause nearby residents to curtail their recreational use of those waterways and affect their quality of life. So you can understand that, okay, so we're talking about environmental pollution. We're talking about disability rights. We're talking about gender bias in the workplace and the intersectionality of Black people with all those things. Now, I don't have anything really bad to say about the sister. And I will say this next case really hits home for me, where she's protecting the Fourth Amendment. In a 2009 case, it was Stafford Unified School District versus Reading. And in this case, school officials searched a 13-year-old Savannah Reading. They searched her backpack and her underwear after getting a report that she was distributing drugs to her peers. 8-1 decision that the search violated Reading the girl's Fourth Amendment rights, which protects a person from unreasonable searches and seizures by the government. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg writes in this dissent, and I quote, "They have never been a 13-year-old girl. It's a very sensitive age for a girl. I didn't think my colleagues, some of them, quite understood," unquote. So you can see by her standing that there was quite a bit of legal work that RBG did when it comes to things that are of particular concern to Black people. And I was tickled to death to find out that she had made this decision in Safford Unified versus Reading, because I did a huge paper when I was at Fresno State on the Fourth Amendment, and really kind of guided me and made me want to, you know, attend law school. But anyway, I am no RBG, but I have a passion for justice, just as this woman did. And so her passing leaves us on many fronts questioning what we should do now. Now, I've heard some people say in retrospect that Ruth Bader Ginsburg should have retired. She should have retired when Obama was going through the end of his first or the beginning of his second, the beginning of his second term, and given Obama a chance to pick another nominee for the court. But she chose not to do that. She chose to fight on. And historically, this is what Supreme Court justices do. They don't just resign. And I think that the boomerang effect on that is that if she had done it, people would use that as an excuse for women in the future. Oh, well, you know, for whatever reason, you know, they can't take it. You know, they're going to get tired. They're going to get sick and tired. And they're going to just resign. But RBG didn't do that. She fought on until the end. And so that's one thing that's up for debate. I'm not sure what she should have done. I know that we're in a quandary now about her replacement. pardon me. I'm fighting a little cold here with the change of seasons. It seems as though the Republicans are going to use this as an opportunity to jam in another conservative on the court. So Justice Roberts is no longer going to be a swing vote. They're going to have a straight majority. Now, mind you, folks, they've already jammed through Kavanaugh, who was like the least qualified person on the court in my eyes. They got Gorsuch. And now they're going to try to get this chick named, what is her name? I think her name is Amy Coney Barrett, and she is a staunchly religious person who believes that men should rule their homes. She's anti-abortion, so she does not think the woman should have a right to choose what happens to her body. And I think she would be a disaster on the court. She would be one of those women who would try to outman the men, if you get what I'm saying. But back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think, personally, one of the few missteps that Ms. Ginsburg did was a comment that she made about Colin Kaepernick and his kneeling early on. She proclaimed that she thought it was dumb that he chose to kneel. And it was obvious to me that she really didn't understand the ramifications. So fast forward 3-4 years later, and she sees what's happened. And she later stated that she wished she had remained silent or gotten a better understanding of Kaepernick's cause. That takes a big person to say, you know, I was not on point with this, that I should have, you know, held on to my opinions until I found out better. And so, but it is what it is. And so Ginsburg also, and this is one case that I didn't research, was the voting rights that the Supreme Court tried to gut. They tried to take out a large part of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and she dissented on that. And I think we need to understand that this woman was a giant among jurists, that without her influence, when you think about, look at Facebook right now, and you think about all the young girls and the babies that mothers and fathers are dressing up their children. I saw that even the NBA, that LeBron James and some of his teammates were wearing a black shirt with a lace collar in remembrance of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So the notorious RBG was a cultural phenomenon. I mean, this woman, this tiny woman who stood 5'1", but was as fierce and passionate about her beliefs as anybody could be, was the kind of person who could be friends with a staunch conservative like Antonin Scalia and still disagree with him when it came to the application of law. or the administration of law. And it takes a big person to do that. Now, this is a woman who had taught at two different law schools. This is a woman like her predecessor, her female predecessor on the court, Sandra Day O'Connor, could not find a job, basically, when she graduated from law school. And so she had to sort of carve out a career, and we are oh so lucky that she did do that. But I have to tell you, friends and neighbors, that we are in a middle of a cluster F-U-C-K. And the reason that we are is not just the idiot in the White House, not just him, but you have uprisings in different cities. William Barr is trying to say that these are anarchists. I believe he said it was New York, San Francisco, and Portland, that they wanted to cut off funding because the cities were out of control. No, these are Americans who are standing up for their rights, saying what's wrong with the government. And I remember studying the Constitution, not just in eighth grade, but in college. And that is our constitutional right, freedom of speech, to disagree with our leaders. You know, and I was just listening. Y'all know that I listen to KPFA every day. And they were talking about the injuries that nonviolent protesters were getting in these cities. I mean, the police and the National Guard, they're launching these projectiles that are, they're calling them non-lethal. They're splitting people's heads open. They're putting people's eyes out. They're leaving bruises and battered people in the street. And so I asked you, is this America? Is this the America that Ruth Bader Ginsburg fought so hard to uphold and protect? Because, mind you, when you take a government job like the one she had, like the president did as well, even though he's forgotten, you have to take an oath of office. And your oath of office says that you will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So RBG took her job very, very seriously. And in doing her job with cases like the Virginia Military Institute, like her cases like, you know, Olmstead versus LC, her cases like Friends of the Earth versus Laidlaw Environmental, you know, her cases like Safford Unified School District versus Reading, these are cases based on the face of them that are going to impact in a positive way people of color, and particularly black people. And I'm saying that with the Fourth Amendment because look at what happened to Breonna Taylor. Breonna Taylor was at home asleep when the police tried to serve a no-knock warrant. Her boyfriend, who had a license to carry, returns fire because he's thinking somebody's breaking in their house. And they killed his sister. They killed her. And I think so far only one person has been fired. Two people are still on leave. And they have gotten Louisville buttoned up because they think all hell's going to break loose because of the trial that's going on. Now, I ask you, if you don't know what the verdict is going to be, why are you buttoning everything up? That seems a little, that seems a little scandalous to me. But I know that those of you who are listening understand that black people, while we might not be used to this behavior, we are no longer surprised by it. The depth of the hatred and the racism and the degradation that white people will put themselves through in order to maintain what they have, the white privilege and white supremacy they have, is outrageous. There is no end to it. There's no top to it. There is no end of the horizon to it. And so if any of you would like to call in and share what your view is of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and how you think that she's affected women's lives and or black lives in America, I welcome you to do so. The call-in number is 516-387-1474. And I really wanted to have a guest on this show tonight. But, you know, it was one of those things where first I had too many people that I wanted to ask, and then I had nobody that I could ask. And then it got too close. But I'm sure that this is not going to be the only show that we do about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And, in fact, Reverend Harris was talking to me the other night about women's rights and white women's rights versus black women's rights.
Drag on.
And where do they intersect? So, Reverend Harris?
Yes, you have a caller online as well.
Okay.
Thank you for doing the show tonight. I believe it's Brother Tony. You know, I was able or blessed to get cable or I don't know what it's called, but anyway, you can watch the news, and I was just sitting there watching a documentary of the judge. And just looking at her journey, you know, coming from a, you know, her childhood life and going into school and then going into the school where you learn law, and to just see how she was being treated. And
yes.
I think that for me, just looking at the documentary, it really showed a lot of strength. You know, when you're in the middle of a fight, when you're in a situation where the odds may be against you, I mean, they talked about how she studied cases on. People had to drag her out of the room to go to bed. She stayed up all night reading and you know, reading all kind of deficit. And, you know, and then to turn around and go to law school and to be treated like, you know, you're unhuman. And, you know, us as black people, African people, is nothing new to us.
No.
This is how, you know, this is business as usual, being a black woman. And, you know, so I think that just, you know, history is so important. And I just thank you for doing your research, presenting this type of information to the community, because it's important. It's important.
It is.
Even though she was a white sister, she
was Jewish, but she was white.
Yeah, she was a white sister, and you know she got done in. But at the same time, I think that you know one of the things I'm pushing for, even in the Freedom School, that I think that we need to start pushing for more, teaching our children it's okay to be a judge. It's okay to. The highest court that she was on, that was the court.
Yeah, she was as high as she could go in her profession.
Yeah.
When you
go the highest you can go, and you have given all. I looked at how she took on the U.S. military, how the U.S. military did not want to allow women into the military, and she took it on and changed policy. See, policy is something that we as black people have to get back to. I mean, we can march, we can hold the signs, that's all great. But we brings attention to the matter, but we have to change policy. And she took on the U.S. military to help these racist white, white men that was treating women unequal, and she changed the culture.
She did.
I mean,
she changed.
She changed
it.
The culture. I mean. I don't know.
No, she did, brother, and that's the whole thing. I think one of the great things about Ruth Bader Ginsburg is that she always would say that she wanted to make changes without alienating anybody, that she wanted to be able to change policy without making a lot of enemies, and that is different in today's world. I mean, when you think about it, she was born in 1933, so that's a very different world that she was born into than what we have today. But anyway, I appreciate you weighing in. I appreciate you giving me the idea for this show. And, you know, I know we have a caller on, so I'll leave it up to you to decide what you want to do, if you want to continue or you want the caller to come on. Because this woman is phenomenal. We could be talking about her for the next hour.
Yes, go ahead.
Well,
good evening.
Good evening. How
good
are
evening.
You?
Good evening.
Fine. How are you?
Great.
I'm good. I'm all fired up about Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her life is very detailed. Right now, FX and HBO and Hulu are all playing her documentary, RBG, the notorious RBG.
And I haven't seen it yet.
The strides that she made have been very detailed. Even though, to a certain extent, you know, she's Jewish, but she's still white. That still gave her a little more balance than had she been a true sister.
True. No doubt about that.
We already know what RBG did, but I'm going to play devil's advocate tonight for a little bit, if you don't mind.
Please do. That's what this show is all about. We like to mix it up.
We're talking about who may be her replacement, and right now the front runner is Amy Coney Barrett, okay, who just happens to be a Seventh Circuit judge. You know, she's a judge on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. She's based in Chicago. She's 48 years old. She got 7 children, okay? And follow what I'm saying. She has 7 children. And like you said, she don't believe in abortion. Her father was an attorney for Shell Oil. Okay, her husband, Mike, he's a deacon at the – they still live in – Metairie, Louisiana, which was where she was born.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, you know, knowing this woman's stance on abortion, the fact that she's on the Court of Appeals, the fact that she is the Orange Blunders front runner, she has 7 children. What is going to tell you?
The American that could be another contender. I think they've already X'd that sister out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what does kind of tell you what they're thinking and the direction that they want to put this court in? And what people need to understand is if this happens, it's no longer a balanced court. It'll be 6-3.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah,
we would have no say whatsoever.
Nope. And what's going to need to happen? Well, let me ask you what I think needs to happen. I think what needs to happen is that they need to expand the court and move it from 9 to, I don't know, 12 or 14 because, you know, they've done it before. I mean, it went from 6 to 9 and then from 9 to 12. So they've done it before. But
yes, they
I
have.
Don't know how hard a push that's going to be.
But my thing is, for example, say we move it to 12 like you suggest. How does that actually play in our favor? How does that help balance things out? Because still, it'll be a 6-6 push.
Well, then it would have to be, 13 or 14 then. It has to be, like, a number that,
exactly.
You know. Everybody knows I'm bad with numbers. But anyway,
but, you know,
I hear
the thing about this.
I think we need to expand the court. I think Democrats are going to have to get pretty vicious. And I think people are not paying attention to the federal courts because you call him the orange blender. 45 has been stuck in the federal courts ever since he got in office. Ever since
yes,
he got
he
in
has.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
he has. I've paid attention to that.
Yeah.
I've paid attention to that. I have followed those journeys. Okay. I have a blog of my own, and I speak about these things from time to time. Not that too many people are paying attention, and I can tell. But at some point, especially those of us of color, are going to have to start really paying attention to our legal system. Just don't pay attention because you heard that Breonna Taylor's family got $12 million, and all I've been hearing, ooh, they're going to get paid. That's not bringing her back.
Nope, she's still dead.
Okay.
Still gone.
See, what you need to be paying attention to is the fact that ain't none of them cats sitting behind bars. You got a guy down there that don't want to charge these people.
The only way that's really going to change, Brother Bullock, to me, is for black people to fully embrace what it means to be a citizen. And in order to do that, you got to take time out of your busy schedule, go to meetings, show up. And I know with the COVID, it's hard. People are doing Zoom meetings and all that. But this pandemic's not going to last forever. You have got to show up. Don't just show up when the building's on fire. Show up
exactly.
All the time and find out what the hell's going on in your neighborhood with your city government.
But I'm going to be
honest. We have got to embrace our citizenship. We pay taxes just like everybody else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they
most assuredly.
Us first. So,
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can answer it.
Go ahead, Rev.
But by the liberal judge of her passing, may she rest in peace, Trump is going to appoint a conservative judge, I'm assuming, on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you feel in our listening audience right now on Facebook Live and on Blog Talk Radio? What are some of the things that you feel that's going to be changed when this new conservative judge get on the bench? Because I think, we're saying judge, but what is it that primarily that they vote on?
What's
some of the things you think specifically that, I know they hate Obama. I mean,
right.
Do you think that everything, because I heard Trump say anything that Obama signed, he's going to sign it to reject it. So what are some of the things you feel that when a new judge come on that Trump is going to say change this, change that, now we got the majority of the
right.
Okay.
Right. Well,
first
and
foremost.
What I think is going to happen is that they're going to abolish Obamacare, and they're going to get rid of Medicare for All. I think they're going to do that. I think that they're going to finish gutting the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And I do think that they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade and make it where women no longer have a choice about getting abortions. And that is unfortunate because that is going to set us back like 50, 60 years. So what's going to happen is that we're going to have to relitigate all these rights that were that we fought for, women's right to choose to have a baby or have an abortion, the right to vote without a whole bunch of hassle, and medical care, you know, even if you have a pre-existing condition. And, Rev, these are things that are going to be dramatic for Black people. You know, I know people who are listening keep saying, well, she keeps talking about Black people. Well, this is a Black Lives Matter show. So this is why I'm talking about Black people. But I think those are big things that are going to happen.
Yeah. Not only that, here's the thing. And it's funny, you went over almost everything that I was going to speak on, but also diversity will disappear. Diversity will disappear. Not only will diversity disappear, like you said, equal rights laws, they're gone. And there'll be no way to litigate them or bring them back up, because I can guarantee you when they stack the court, they're going to fix it so they don't have to do it. Think about that.
Yeah, I agree. The only way it's going to happen is if it goes through Congress. And that's going to be a fight. And the only way that it's going to go through Congress with both the House and the Senate is if Democrats get a majority in both houses. That's the only way that's going to happen. And if a Democratic president is sitting in the White House.
I mean, you have another caller online, 7244.
Okay.
7244.
Welcome, caller. Go ahead.
Hello, how are you all?
Good, thank you. What did you want to share with us tonight?
Just as us as Africans, Black folk are still going through the same traumatic experiences as we were 40, 50, even 100, 200 years ago here in America. I think one thing we really can agree on, if we are historically intact, is that America has never gave a damn, excuse me, for saying about Africans in the now. And when we say, well, hey, we're Black, the very thing that makes us Black most times is that we have African genealogy attached. Mm-hmm. We have African genetics. Those are the very mm-hmm. things. So, and when we go back a lot further, and we are able to accept the transatlantic slave trade, in which has an overwhelming amount of documentation attached to it, we have many of our ancestors that were actually brought here from the continent of Africa. And, you know, so basically ever since we were kings and queens, running our own civilizations for thousands of years and then invaded, by the likes of some of these same people, you know, we find ourselves in pretty much the same situation today. And I'm convinced that this European, nor this construct, this paradigm, this system, be it, in my opinion, red or blue, has our best interests at heart. You know, nobody... We're going to actually have to get together. And if anybody had and was closer to what the solution was here in America, it was people like Marcus Garvey. It was people mm-hmm. like the Black Panthers that were, you know, pushing for a political mm-hmm. party that represented them, that represented us right. as a people. We have to look at how we are spending our dollars, how we're spending our attention. You understand? There's no use of us talking.
Because I agree with what you're saying, and this is why I want to ask my question. You have to excuse me. Did you hear about those 19 families down in down south?
Georgia.
I think it's in Florida that
Georgia.
Bought 97 acres and are starting their own town. What do you think about that?
I think it's good, and also I think it's bad. Because they're doing a reality show. They're doing a reality show.
Oh, they decided to go ahead with that. Okay.
Right, right. So I think it's going to be, you know, when we're talking about facing this machine that has not only been brought to us on this soil. This has been a machine that has been able to covertly hide itself and, you know, mask itself in, inside certain forms, even in the form of us as black folk. You understand?
Wow.
We must be honest in saying that whenever, and this is a war, we must be honest in saying whenever you are actually looking to make substantial moves in a war, you can't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. You understand?
Exactly.
And that's very important that we are honest with that approach and knowing exactly, because these people aren't just dying. You aren't seeing the police kill us and shoot us down like dogs for no reason. It's because it's the same war that it has always been. So when we have a thing like that, which is a substantial movement, you know, I asked the question, well, hey, we had Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we see what happened here in America. It was the first time any country had bombed its own soil, or basically,
right.
You know,
Reverend Harris talks about
you know,
Black Wall Street quite a bit. Yes.
Yeah. So.
Right.
Just because we are owning land, and we still don't have any military might, or we don't have any. And what is going to be our enforcement or their enforcement to be able to protect that type of situation
in the event?
Somebody
was asking me this, brother, on Facebook, and this is what I said to him in response to that, because, yes, it's true, we don't have our own military, we don't have bombs and stuff, but we do have people who are in military installations, and I don't know if you've ever read the book, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. It was very popular in the 1960s. This was a brother who was a member of the CIA, I believe. Was he the CIA or FBI? And they never trusted him to do anything, right? That, you know, they sit him by the door. He's watching everything. He learns their tactics. And he winds up being in a position to do something about it. So I'm just saying to everybody, think about this book, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. And I don't even know if it's still in print, but if it is in print, everybody who's black needs to read it, because it is a blueprint of how we need to conduct ourselves when the come down comes down. But, brother, I want to thank you so much for calling in. And, Reverend Harris, in our last few minutes, like we do every week, I want to open it up for you, say what you need to say, and to thank you for the platform. This is a very important show for me. So I'm not saying that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a be-all and end-all, this tiny little Jewish woman, but she did make a wedge in the door for those of us who are women, those of us who are black, those of us who are marginalized. So, Rev, in our last minute, what would you like to share?
Yeah, thank you. I hate our caller drop, but I wanted to say some things to him, but I think, you know, he made a good point in regard to, you know, when we as black people start a movement, we start building for ourselves. One of the things we need to do is put some damn duct tape over our damn mouth, okay, and shut the hell up and execute the plan that needs to be planned, and quit broadcasting every damn thing that we doing. Okay?
Yeah.
You don't have to put everything on Facebook. You don't have to put everything on the radio. You know, I mean, there's things that Freedom School is doing that I just don't publicize because there's nobody damn business. Okay?
Right.
Because you have to understand this enemy stays up 24 hours a day. Okay, watching us. They have done scientific studies on black people. Okay.
Yeah.
Look at the syphilis. Look at Black Wall Street. There was over 30 black towns built after slavery, and I'll be damned if all of them burnt down to the ground. Now, our black people in 1921 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they didn't have Facebook. They didn't have Instagram. They didn't have laptops.
No.
They didn't have flip phones. They didn't have eye tablets. They didn't have none of the stuff that we have today. But what they have that I see that we're struggling today to have is unity. They
yes.
had unity amongst one another, and they believed in each other, and there was each other's kickstand, and they understood that if one struggle, we all struggle until we all stop struggling.
Yes.
And so, we have to get back to, yes, it's a wonderful thing that they bought the land. But I'm like to call it. You didn't have to broadcast it doing a whatever show. You just do what you need to do. Do it good. Do it excellent, and move forward. Because we're not just building for ourselves. We're building for our children and our great grandchildren. We're building for your niece, Sister Eileen. We're building for your niece, children. We're building for Brother Tony. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know. The sister did a great job. I love the documentary. But
I have to see that. I have to watch it.
I say but because, you know, Rosa Parks did the same thing. When Rosa Parks didn't get up out of that seat, she changed policy.
Yes,
so
she did.
At the end of the day, we have to change policy. I mean, that's why I love you so much, how you bring these different stories out and research out. It makes you start thinking, you know? We could build a Black Wall Street in Fresno if we wanted to. We got too many house Negroes and folks that's bought off and just sold out that we can't even come together to go pick up paper together without arguing and fighting and fucking. But then when you look at the economic piece of the bonds, the Hispanics, they're owning shopping centers. They're owning gas stations. They're owning all the stores in the Black community. They own it, and it's like, what are we doing? We're sitting here fighting amongst each other about who got what, and nobody got nothing. So I just, when he said that, it really, you know, sparked an interest in me, because I'm always thinking about, well, I mean, I got things I'm thinking about right now that I haven't even presented. Tell our listening audience something. The Creator may have you more, what's the word, advanced than the people that's around you. And you have to be careful about who you tell your ideas to and your vision, because they may kill it.
That's true.
Before you even get it off the ground. I mean, and when I say kill it, I mean by saying negative things.
Negative energy.
Negative energy. We don't need negative energy. I mean, we got 45 to give us all the negative energy we need. Every day, 24 hours a day is negative energy. Okay, so if the Creator's giving you a vision, giving you a drive, pray on it. Talk to someone like-minded that can help you build your vision. Okay.
Yeah.
The Black Panther Party gave us a blueprint. It's still good.
It's still good.
Malcolm X gave us. It's still good. It's still good.
Oh yeah.
We just gotta apply it. I'm gonna give it back to you. Brother Tony, I'm gonna call you my brother. I ain't forgot about you, but I'm gonna give it back.
All right, everybody. I want to give Brother Bullock a couple of minutes to wrap up anything that he might want to say about tonight's subject. And before I do that, I just want to say I appreciate the second caller who called in. I wasn't sure that the people down south were gonna do the reality show. I guess they decided they were gonna do it. And that's unfortunate. So, Brother Bullock, do you have anything that you want to say, any final words?
Well, you know, with the passing of Justice Ginsburg, it kind of leaves us in a spot where we really looking and going, what comes next? Black, white, pink, or purple. If you're voting Democrat, you got to stand tall. You got to come to the forefront. You cannot be out here half-stepping, because if you do not, you cannot put up with nor deal with 4 more years of what you've been going through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just being honest about that. Remember that old thing you used to hear all the time? Last hired, first fired.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what you'll be dealing with politically. Nothing that you really think that you really need is going to come to you. Minorities will really catch hell in that new society, because the police department's already proven how they feel about it. So imagine what will come next.
That's true. That's true.
You
and
know,
I'm
hoping.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm really hoping that black folks don't sit at home. Don't do what you did in 2016. Take your ass to the polls. Too many good folks died to give you the right to vote. Damn it, use it. With that, I'm going to say what I always say. Each one, reach one, and teach one. Watch out for one another. Those of you that can, arm yourselves. Train yourselves. Go to the range. Get proficient. Register your firearm. Start a cop watch. Start a neighborhood watch. Take care of one another. I will holler.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. And I want to take this opportunity to thank all the people who are listening. I think it's really important that we understand the intersectionality of what Ruth Bader Ginsburg did in her decisions and in her life. And it's really unfortunate that we're even talking about going backwards in time. I just want to expand on something that Brother Bullock just said when he said minorities are going to catch hell. I think it's even going to be more dramatic than that. I think that the crisis that we're having at the border with young children in cages, I think that is going to be the rest of us. I think that we're going to be looking at concentration camps because the jails are not going to be able to hold all the people that they are going to be arresting for whatever charges. I think we are looking at a militaristic, authoritative kind of government. And I think, and I'm not trying to scare anybody, I'm trying to be very, very truthful. As somebody who's made a avocation of studying government and politics, I say this wholeheartedly. Democracy only survives if you're willing to participate. It only works
Amen.
If you're willing to vote and fight for it. So, and I'm not talking about fighting just with hand-to-hand combat, although I am not adverse to that. I'm talking about getting involved, staying involved, not getting distracted, understanding that you have a right to be here. Why? Because black people built this country. Okay, we built this, you know, we are all living on stolen land. Let's just be clear about that. And so with that, I want to say I love y'all, take care of each other, and as I always say when I get ready to close, stay black till we get back. God bless.